1017 The Truth. It's your girl, Jazz Tyler. Milwaukee, mark your calendars. Join us for Truth Family Fest tomorrow, Saturday, August 22nd, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Riverside University High School. It's free and fun for the entire family, featuring great music, community resources, family activities, and back-to-school support to help students get ready for a successful school year. Interested in volunteering? Visit the Truth Family Fest website at truthfamilyfest.com to complete the volunteer form, or by emailing Sierra at Sierra@CIERRA.Brown@MilwaukeeBlackMedia.com. Bring the whole family and experience one of Milwaukee's favorite community celebrations, Truth Family Fest, Saturday, August 22nd from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Special thanks to Educators Credit Union, American Family Insurance, Milwaukee Public Schools, Artists Working in Education, City of Milwaukee, DCWS, AB CoreCore, Ascension, and Tap In MKE. Before we went to break, we were talking about touching on the Carmelo Anthony case. And we're not talking about the former NBA player. We are talking about the young man who is currently on trial for the murder of his peer. And prosecutors revealed new evidence that jurors never heard during Carmelo Anthony's murder trial, including allegations that he fantasized about stabbing someone and licking the blood off of a blade, according to the reports. The Daily Mail reported that the allegations surfaced on Thursday during a hearing following Anthony's request for a new trial in the April 2025 stabbing death of 17-year-old Austin Metcalf at a high school track meet in Frisco, Texas. Carmelo, now 19, was convicted of murder and sentenced to 35 years in prison in June. He admitted stabbing Metcalf, but said he acted in self-defense amid a confrontation, and jurors rejected that argument. During Thursday's hearing, State Prosecutor Bill Wiersky said evidence excluded from the trial included text messages in which Anthony allegedly thought about stabbing someone just hours before he killed Metcalf. He said there, according to the report, it said there's a text message where he fantasized about stabbing someone and licking the blood off the blade, Wiersky said, the media outlet reported. Another text message recovered from Anthony's phone allegedly included a photo of a knife, as well as the words, "I'm low-key on the verge," per the outlet. Wiersky reportedly said Anthony's ex-girlfriend had told a school administrator she was afraid of Anthony and accused him of stalking her. The Daily Mail also reported that Anthony's lawyers had damaging evidence against Austin Metcalf and his twin brother Hunter. Citing court documents, the outlet noted that Anthony's attorneys had photos of graffiti alleging that the Metcalf twins and a third body, which is another person, spray painted KKK, kill all black people, heal Hitler, as well as a racial slur. According to the report, the evidence was withheld because prosecutors in Anthony's trial had an informal gentleman's agreement to focus solely on what happened under the tent that day and avoid introducing potentially inflammatory evidence about Anthony and Metcalf. So here's the crazy thing in all of this to me. First and foremost, I hated to even read that, primarily because whenever it comes to a young black male stating that they need to defend themselves or that it was self-defense, then they're always obviously going to try and find something on them, you know, to kind of discredit their character. And to be fair, if this was the case, right, where he did text that, then obviously that can be viewed as premeditation. But to completely exclude the text messages, both sides initially stating that they have a gentleman's, you know, request or whatever it's called, I get it, but at the same time, I don't. Because no matter who it is, at the end of the day, if something is premeditated, if someone is really feeling a way, I'm not talking about in a sense of he's doing it just because he wants to do it, that like he's a psycho, but I'm speaking about it in a way of what was actually happening prior to this day to make him feel that way, right? Why was he so angry? Why did he feel the need to want to fight the twins, or what were they doing to him as well? Just trying to figure it out and, you know, make it make sense. But I don't think that's something that should have been left out. I don't believe that they should have left those text messages out. I believe that initially it should have. Obviously, it's out now, so they should have introduced it during that time as well. Also, in Carmelo's case, the judge who presided over his murder trial is no longer deciding the motion for a new trial. Judge John Roach Jr. was removed from the post-trial proceedings. Roach had given a television interview after the conviction and publicly said the jury got it right. Retired Judge Michael Chitty is now presiding over the new trial hearing. Again, I don't know how much this helps his case or hurts his case after the new leaked text messages between him and his ex-girlfriend. So just to reiterate for those who are joining us, here's what came out this week surrounding Carmelo Anthony's case. During the original murder case, prosecutors and Carmelo Anthony's attorneys had an off-the-record agreement concerning character evidence, the state and background information concerning Anthony. The defense had background information concerning the Metcalf twins as well. That information stayed out of the original murder trial, and now we are hearing what was in those records. So prosecutors disclosed messages recovered from Anthony's phone. According to testimony in the hearing, those messages showed repeated discussions involving guns, knives, and fighting. There were older messages discussing violence. There were photos or videos involving firearms. There were messages discussing carrying guns. And there were messages involving knives. Now, let's narrow this down to the morning of the killing. So on April 2nd, 2025, according to evidence disclosed at the hearing, Anthony sent his former girlfriend a message at approximately 1 o'clock that morning saying he was low-key on the verge. Later that morning, his former girlfriend went to a school official. She reported concerns about Anthony's behavior after their breakup and said he was refusing to accept that the relationship had ended. Reporting from the hearing says Anthony also sent her a photograph involving a knife that morning. Less than 2 hours after she spoke with the school administrator, Anthony ended up fatally stabbing Austin Metcalf during the track meet. Now, I don't know how this is going to play out, because when you read it, it sounds like he was feeling away based off of the breakup with his girlfriend, and that sent him over the edge on top of whatever was going on with him and the Metcalf twins prior to the breakup, right? And I get it. We all have a breaking point at some point, but to me, it still feels like there's a lot of different a lot of missing information surrounding this. Like there has to be more. I don't personally believe that he's just going to send those messages just because. I don't even know if the messages are real or if they are true. And I most definitely want to know if his girlfriend is black or white, because that matters as well. The confrontation happened under a team tent. Witnesses' testimony from the original case described an argument over Anthony being inside the tent. Metcalf attempted to remove Anthony. The confrontation became physical. Anthony pulled a knife and stabbed Metcalf once in the chest. Anthony acknowledged the stabbing. His trial defense argued self-defense, and the jury convicted him of murder. The records disclosed this week contained additional messages attributed to Anthony involving fighting and weapons. One set of older messages discussing robbing someone. Other messages discuss vandalism. There were communications involving guns and bringing a gun to social events. In testimony at the hearing, referenced a message in which Anthony described a violent fantasy involving stabbing someone. Again, these records that existed before the original trial but were not introduced to the jury. The crazy thing of this all is the media has so much to say about Anthony's text messages, right? And obviously, if Metcalf was attempting to remove him from the tent, it had to be due to whatever situation they had prior to that day. So maybe they didn't like each other. Maybe they were into it. Now they're introducing the ex-girlfriend. Now we need to figure out, you know, what's her role in this and if she had any relations or any type of dealings with the Metcalf brothers as well. This is interesting. This is very interesting, especially because they did not initially include these messages in the initial part of the trial. We have to get ready to go to break. When we come back, we are going to switch phones. When we went through Carmelo Anthony's records, now we're going to go through Austin Metcalf's, and there is a document history here. Racist graffiti, KKK, the N-word, Hitler, juvenile probation, a bullying allegation involving a black student, previous fight, school suspensions, a gun-related school incident, and material recovered from Austin's cell phone. Then I'm bringing you to what happened today in court, why Carmelo Anthony originally planned to testify at his murder trial, and why he ultimately never took the witness stand. That's after the break. Do not touch that dial. It's your girl, Jazz Tyler, 1017 The Truth.
Did you violate it?
One-on-one-seven The Truth. It's your girl Jazz Tyler. We are live and direct at the award-winning 1017 The Truth in the American Family Insurance Studio in the beautiful 3rd Street Market Hall. If you are just now joining us, we are covering the Carmelo Anthony case. The new trial hearing. Before we went to break, we went through information from Anthony's phone, and now we are going to the records concerning Austin Metcalf that were also kept outside of the original trial. So apparently, Anthony, there were text messages found in his phone where he was talking to his ex-girlfriend. There were pictures of guns and knives, and apparently hours before the stabbing, he stated that he was on the verge. So on and so on. Now we're going to dig into some of the things that were found inside of Austin's phone. Shout out to the chat. Aaron says, luckily it didn't go out. He would have had a capital murder charge. Exactly. Okay, so to your point, that's probably why the lawyer said that they wouldn't introduce that inside of the case. So that actually makes sense. So records disclosed at this hearing show Austin Metcalf and his twin brother had previously been involved in spray painting racist and anti-Semitic graffiti. The graffiti included references to the KKK, the N-word, Hitler, and that incident resulted in juvenile consequences. So additional school records include disciplinary incidents involving Austin. Records discussed during the hearing include allegations of bullying, prior fights, suspensions, and confrontations involving other students. There was also a school incident involving discussion about bringing a firearm to school, and those records were not presented to the murder jury. So the investigators had Austin's cell phone. Anthony's former trial attorney, Mike Howard, testified about material extracted from that phone. According to Kira, the defense had information concerning Metcalf's racist behavior and violence, including material that wasn't put before the jury. So understand what existed before this trial. Investigators had Carmelo Anthony's phone. Investigators had Austin Metcalf's phone. They had school records. They had juvenile records. They had prior text messages. They had character evidence involving both teenagers. And the attorneys kept much of the material outside the original trial under their agreement. Now let's take a look at today. One of Carmelo Anthony's original trial attorneys, Toby Shook, took the witness stand. And one of the biggest questions was, why didn't Carmelo Anthony testify at his own murder trial? So Shook testified that Anthony originally planned to testify. And that matters because Anthony's defense was self-defense. Taking the stand would have allowed Anthony himself to describe the confrontation and what he says he perceived immediately before he stabbed Metcalf. But the plan changed. So Anthony's attorneys became concerned about putting him on as a witness, right, about putting him on that stand, and that it could allow prosecutors to introduce damaging character evidence that had previously been kept outside of the case. And they're talking about, obviously, the text messages that were sent as well as the photos. And Anthony ultimately did not testify. Not only that, but his new attorneys are now raising that decision as part as of their request for another trial. So the new trial motion also raises issues involving courtroom access and how some of this evidence was handled outside the public record. The new judge, Judge Michael Chitty, is hearing this motion, and Anthony's conviction remains in place. He was sentenced to 35 years. And as of this afternoon, the court is considering whether to grant the request for a new trial or not. Whew. This is heavy. This is extremely heavy. It is, to Aaron's point, I now understand why they initially wouldn't introduce this information, but the danger in that is out now. It's out now. He has a new judge as well. And despite of whether they allow this evidence or not, it's still going to play in the minds of the jurors, right? They're still, no matter how much they say Metcalf, you know, had text messages that were anti-Semitic, you know, KKK and bullying and all of this other stuff, because he is deceased, they are automatically going to kind of dismiss that and pay attention more to the messages that were found and the things that were found inside of Carmelo's phone. And to the youth out there that's listening, this is a great example of controlling your emotions. Because let's say hypothetically, again, I don't know, because I am not his lawyer. I am not involved in Anthony's case. But let's say hypothetically that he had no intention of interacting with Austin whatsoever, had no premeditation thoughts about anything, and that he alone was just, as the kids like to say, overstimulated because of the heartbreak, or, you know, with him breaking up with his girlfriend. And during that time, any little thing can set him off. Any little thing, anybody that attempts to bother him, or let's say that wasn't the case. It wasn't a breakup. He just had a bad day. We've all had a bad day. There's been situations where people have bad days and they wake up and they be like, you know what? You got one more time. You got one more time. I'm on the edge. If you push me, it's going down, right? That's what it sounds like to me. It sounds like he has some things going on. I think what's unfair is that he can't explain those things, right? And the fact that not only him, but Metcalf had pictures of guns and things of that nature in his phone as well. So the difference is, here's the difference. When we're talking about the things that was found inside of our Carmelo Anthony's cell phone, it wasn't specific to anyone other than his girlfriend. There were apparently some messages directed at her and geared at her based off of them, you know, breaking up. But other than that, he didn't say, hey, I'm going to go to school and stab Austin and lick his blood off this knife. Or, hey, I'm going to, you know, if he come to me, I plan to do this or I plan to do that. He didn't do that. Austin, on the other hand, KKK, using the N-word, that is objective. So Carmelo, his text messages, right or wrong, no, I don't approve of them, but they are subjective. They are in a subjective manner. They don't list anyone's name. Austin's text messages, however, doesn't list anyone's name, but it does. Because we all know when you use words like KKK and Hitler and the N-word, right? Ninja. We know exactly who you are talking about. We know exactly what it is that you're referring to. And you're talking about not just one person. You are talking about a group of people in general, which means that you have a hatred towards a specific ethnicity. There is no evidence proving that Carmelo had any beef with Austin from these text messages, or white people overall for that matter. But there is evidence in Austin's phone proving that he has an issue with black people. On top of the fact that he mentioned something about bringing guns to schools and all of that other stuff, and apparently received juvenile consequences for it. So as this case, you know, continues to go on, I do hope that they mention this. I do hope, and I get it. I understand that it could hurt Carmelo, but his lawyer has to figure out a way to explain this. His lawyer has to figure out, again, just because they left it out of the first trial does not mean that the jurors haven't seen it and that they won't take that into consideration despite of if they're told not to. That's like if you're cheating on somebody and they don't know about it and all of a sudden you accidentally send a picture. I can't unsee what I sent. No matter how much I forgive you, I can't unsee what I can't unsee what you sent. It's still going to replay in my mind, and it's still going to have a determining factor in whether or not I want to deal with you. And that's the same thing. That's what's difficult about this situation, because it has been leaked and it has been exposed. There is no way for the jurors or anybody who's involved in this case to not read the messages or not think about the messages that were sent. And again, it's a slippery slope, because if you are, as the kids say, overstimulated and you are having a bad day, and somebody actually does, you know, come up and do something to make you react, we the people know that's not necessarily premeditation. That's manifestation. That is manifestation at its best. Have you ever been in a situation and you was at the crib or wherever you was at, and you like, man, I promise if somebody do this today, if somebody try me, if somebody whoop the whoop the whoop, and then all of these attacks start coming, that's because you have physically said this out of your mouth. And although you can't prove that in court, we know the real. We know that 9 times out of 10, it had nothing to do with him. He was on edge about some stuff he was dealing with his girl at the time. That don't give him a right to say the things that he said. But evidently there was something that was going on. So I would then say, I wonder if they're going to pull the mental health card, right? I wonder if they are going to pull the mental health card for Carmelo the same way they do for these white boys. And the reason why I say that is because when you read these text messages, if they are indeed true, he does have some type of issue mentally, or he does have some type of issue with anger. He has some type of issues when it comes to expressing himself. So that means that is probable cause to look into if, in fact, Carmelo has some type of mental disability. Looking at these text messages, as a parent, as an educator, most definitely have something going on anger wise, not towards anyone else meaning, but just like some of the things that were said. If this is true, these thoughts, that is an issue. That means that he needs help mentally. Doesn't necessarily mean that he premeditated or planned on doing anything to Austin. Austin, kids, y'all got to keep your hands to yourself. Don't give nobody no right to stab you or to harm you or anything like that. But it could have been prevented. It could have been prevented had he kept his hands to himself, period, point blank. That boy would have kept his hands to himself. More than likely, this situation wouldn't be what it is. And again, I'm eager to see how the rest of this is going to play out, especially because there is a new judge involved. And now that these text messages have been leaked, you know, this is going to change the trajectory of this entire case. All in all, I just wish the best for Carmelo. I don't want to see any young black male in a situation like him, especially when they feel like they are on edge and over the edge. And maybe there was multiple cries out for help and no one was helping him, right? But whatever it is, my heart goes out to him and his family. And I do hope and pray that something happens with this case to where he don't have to spend the next 35 years in prison. So again, I'll continue to cover this story. We got to go to break. When we come back, we have some special guests at the 5:30 hour. And at the 6 o'clock hour, we are going to talk about True Family Fest tomorrow. We have some performances, all types of things happening. Do not touch that dial. It's your girl Jazz Tyler, 1017 The Truth. It's your girl Jazz Tyler. We are live and direct, and we have a special guest in the building, Kiyomora. Thank you so much for joining us. You will be performing tomorrow at Truth Family Fest.
Yes.
Are you excited?
Yes, I'm so excited. Thank you for inviting me, guys.
Yes, absolutely. So let's jump into it. For someone hearing your name for the first time on Truth Radio, who is Kiyomora?
Hey, y'all. So my name is Kiyomora, and I just want everybody to know that I am full of love. Yes. When we listen to my music, we're going to sing, laugh, dance. We're going to cry. We're going to have a good time. I always tell people that I am just a young woman in her 20s figuring out life. And that's what you kind of get from my music.
So. Yes, absolutely. So you were born and raised in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. How did growing up here shape your sound and the woman that you've become?
Well, so I grew up in the church. My family, we are very musically inclined. So I'm actually a pastor's kid. So,
okay.
Yeah, I was at church every Sunday, literally in every activity that you could think of in the church. And so when you at church, you better be doing something. You like on the usher board, you singing. Yeah. And so my mom, she's a singer. My whole family sings. So I think with my family, they just really shaped my sound too.
Yeah.
You know, being in the church, you gotta learn. You learn about harmonies and all that type of stuff. And then also Milwaukee culture, we have our own sound as well. And
absolutely.
So all the artists that I know in Milwaukee are really cool and doing really cool things. So I'm just really happy to be a part of that, you know?
Absolutely. When did you realize singing was something that you wanted to take seriously?
Well, firstly, I just can't stop singing.
What you say? Like, no matter where I'm at.
Yes, like I was the kid at home where my mama is really telling me to be quiet. Like, girl, go to bed. I'm like, wait a minute. I just got one more song in me. Wait a minute. But I knew that I wanted to take it serious when I realized I was doing shows and I was able to, like, speak to people.
Yes.
And I was actually, you know, captivating the audience, and people were actually interested in what I was doing. And I'm like, okay, this is my passion. And I can do it without getting paid.
Yeah.
But, you know, now that I can't get paid from it, I'm like, hey, now, period,
I know
let's
that's
go.
Right.
But I love it. So, yeah.
So your music feels personal. Mm-hmm. How much of it reflects your real life?
All of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All of it. Yeah. Pretty much all of it. I would say, except for Scammer Love, that I was just the artist that I was working with, we kind of just wrote it like a spinoff of T-Pain. But pretty much all of it, like I said, it's just me talking about my life, me becoming a woman in my 20s.
Yes.
I'm a mom. I'm in college. Like, I'm experiencing love, you know, breakups, heartbreak, all that type of stuff. Friends, you know, losing friends. So, you know. Yeah.
Absolutely. So your project is called The Introduction. Mm-hmm. Why did you choose that? And why do you feel like it fits where you are in your life now?
So I chose the introduction because really it was just a collection of songs that I kind of wanted to introduce to people.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote those songs between 17 to like 19, 18. And so I just decided that I'm like, okay, this is my way of introducing myself to people. So the project is, it turned 2 on July 10th. And so I released it July 10th, 2024. And so I feel like it still fits and it is very relevant today to where I am in my life as well, because I talk about like heartbreak, you know, being confident, find little thing,
mm-hmm.
Having standards, all of those are still relevant to, you know, where you are or where you can be in your life. Like if you haven't have standards and somebody not treating you right.
Yeah.
You tell them, hey, go somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? You can't treat me like that. Those are my standards. Finally free if you're going through a breakup and you just want to kind of stand on business and say, this is where I am in my life and I want to grow.
Yeah.
I'm finally free of all the stuff, you know, the old stuff. So, and then Fine Little Thing, that's my favorite song. It's just a confidence booster. I listen to that song every day.
Yeah.
I wrote it for you know, myself to help me feel more confident.
Yes.
And now I've noticed that more women are listening to that song and they tell me how confident that it makes them feel. So,
That's amazing. So it sounds like your music has grown over the years as you've grown. Mm-hmm. I think it's very intriguing and very needed, necessary for young Black women in their 20s to kind of produce this type of music. I used to do music, and I always say, I never want to go back to my 20s. The 20s is, like, difficult because you're still trying to figure out who you are.
It could be confusing.
Yeah, it is. And you have so many different things you want to do, so many people you're around. You're trying to figure it out, and it's a lot. What is your process like creating? How do you take a real-life situation and put it into your music to reflect that?
Honestly, I have to sit on it a little bit. Like, if something is really bothering me, I have to, like, sit on it, reflect on it, be able to write about how I feel. Sometimes I'll talk to my closest friends. Sometimes I'll talk to my family.
Mm-hmm.
It really depends on, like, the situation. But majority of the time, the creative process is me. I'm listening to a beat. Or if I'm driving or I'm in a shower and I get a melody in my head, I'm like, hold on, wait.
I gotta write this together.
I literally always have my voice memo just ready to go, because sometimes you just get the melody and I just hurry up and click record and I, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely feel you on what you were talking about with the 20s and stuff, because sometimes I tell my mom, I'm like, Mama, what is wrong with me? She's like, girl, nothing is wrong with you. You are okay. You are doing well. I'd be like, oh, my gosh, I'm so confused.
Yeah.
But it is. It's a little ghetto.
It is, especially if you're a mom. It's a lot.
Yes.
But, you know, have fun. Mm-hmm. Have fun with everything you're doing. Enjoy it. You know, enjoy motherhood.
Yes.
Enjoy expressing yourself as well. So when we think about Milwaukee, we know there's a lot of rappers that's coming out, right? And it seems like the R&B is starting to rise up a little bit more. What do you think R&B artists need more of in order to get the national attention similar to the hip-hop artists here?
Honestly, I would just say be yourself and be consistent.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the bookings that I get is just from me being consistent and being in the right rooms and you know, being professional, showing up professionally, and literally just being consistent and being authentic.
Like, yes.
I get most of my fan base from being myself. My fan base know I'm goofy. We gonna talk. I talk to them. I'm like, y'all, what y'all doing today?
Yeah.
And they be just writing back to me. But I would just say literally being authentic, staying consistent, staying professional, and creating your brand, knowing who you want to be.
Yeah. What is your favorite thing about being an artist, about creating?
I feel like my favorite thing is the whole creative process of, like, a song. It's so interesting to see how when I'm in, you know, like, writing and I'm doing those voice memos and I, you know, scratching off words and stuff, and then I go into the studio and then, you know, the layers and the harmonies and the stacks and all that, and then you literally have a song. It's like, literally it's like if you painting or something, sometimes you'll draw it and you paint it and you leave it and you add some color, kind of fade it out, or it's literally a whole process.
Yes.
I enjoy it. That's my whole favorite process. And then performing, interacting with my supporters. So yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely. How old is your baby? How many babies do you have?
I have one son. His name is Nasir. Hey, Nasir. he's 3. And oh my goodness, he is a ball of energy. Yeah. He is so smart. I love him. I love motherhood.
How do you balance it with chasing your dreams?
Whew. I be praying.
I know it, baby.
I be praying, but the crazy part is I have a really, really great team.
Yes.
And so they really work with me. Like, even if I have to take him to a video shoot, they are so lenient. Like, yes, my friends be like, okay, come on, Nasir. We finna do this while your mama working. And then Nasir, like, my mama singing today.
Yeah.
Like, he be like, he be telling everybody, my mama be singing. Yeah. And so, my friends are very, very supportive. My family is very supportive. I tell my mom, and I be like, hey, mom, I got a couple shows this week. Yeah. I have to be here. And she be like, okay, let me know. You need to let me know in advance because I got my stuff too now. But,
absolutely.
I pray and I keep God first too.
Absolutely. We got Kiamora hanging out with us. And when we come back, we are talking about what's next. When it comes to Truth Family Fest tomorrow, do not touch that dial. It's your girl, Jazz Tyler.
I'm in love with a scammer, he got it. He spend when we shopping. I ain't going nowhere, boy, you got me. I'm in love with a scammer, he cashing and he making deposits. I ain't going nowhere.
It's your girl Jazz Tyler. American Family Insurance is a proud sponsor of The Truth for almost 100 years. They've been committed to helping families protect what matters most, your home, your vehicle, and the dreams you are building every single day. And if you are a part of The Truth audience, you already know you work hard for yours. That's why having the right protection in place matters. American Family helps you stay ready for whatever life brings so you can focus on moving forward. Insure carefully and dream fearlessly with American Family Insurance. Get a quote or find an agent at amfam.com. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, SI, and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin. Milwaukee, you are officially tapped in. Thank y'all so much for joining us today. We have a special guest in the building. Kiamora is here, and she is going to perform at Truth Family Fest tomorrow. So, tomorrow you are hitting the stage. What can people expect from your performance?
So tomorrow y'all can expect to dance. We gonna vibe. We gonna talk about standards.
Yeah.
We gonna talk about having confidence.
Yes.
And we gonna talk about how we done came up on them bands. So yeah, we gonna have a good time. I always say we gonna have a good R&B time. And yeah, y'all, we gonna have a great time.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. For somebody who discovers your music tomorrow, what song would you want them to listen to first?
I would say maybe I Done Came Up.
Okay.
Yeah. Or Fine Little Thing.
Speaking of I Done Came Up, it has an interesting story. You wrote it during a time when you basically had you weren't stable financially, and you were envisioning a better life. What has changed for you since you wrote that record?
Ooh, I Done Came Clock it.
I know, that's right.
No, but for real, like, that's what I'm talking about. When you have to write music from a real place, that song was really manifestation for me because literally I wrote that song probably when I had maybe $10 in my account, for real, for real. When I went to the studio, I had $10 in my account. And I was like, look, I'm coming up. I don't know when, but I'm going to come up. And so, really just even the process of coming up, though, for real, you have to be disciplined. You have to keep focused so you don't lose sight of the goal. And so that song really, really helped me. Just I listen to that song every day.
So you also have a song called Standards, and it's basically about refusing to lower your expectations in a relationship. Have your standards changed as you've gotten older?
Yeah, they have changed. And the crazy part is, so I wrote that song when I was 17. I started writing the song when I was 17. And then when I finally finished it, I believe I was 20 when I finished it, and 21 when it was released, I think. And I just, you know what I'm saying? I want to be treated right.
Yes.
You know, I don't feel like you should settle. And there's no reason for us to be together if you think that I should settle.
Absolutely.
So, I don't know.
Absolutely.
Don't be settling.
Right. What does success look for you right now? Look like?
Really just to be happy. Like, mm-hmm. To be happy, to be at peace, and to be able to do what I love.
Yeah.
Make sure my son is happy. Make sure that he is experiencing a happy mom.
Yes. Come on.
Yeah, that I'm able to pour out, you know, my happiness into others. But so, you know, success is not always monetary, or I hope I'm saying that word right. Ooh, don't let me embarrass myself. For real.
Monetary is,
is that a word?
Yeah.
Okay.
Monetary, yeah.
Oh, okay, that's the word. But yeah, so it's not always like about money and stuff. So as long as I'm happy and I'm at peace and I'm doing what I love, I feel like that's success.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So with you being a young lady, being a mom, mm-hmm. Coming up in the church, mm-hmm. your parents are, you know, your father was a pastor or is a pastor. Mm-hmm. On top of obviously chasing your dreams, that is not necessarily the genre, right, that you would necessarily go through being a child, someone who comes from the church. Ooh. How difficult has it been to get your family to accept you as an R&B artist?
Honestly, at first it was a little hard, you know, because when you grow up in the church, they want you to do one genre, and that's Christian.
Yeah.
You know, they want you to be a gospel artist. And I told my family, like, hey, God gave me this gift to write. Mm-hmm. I am a writer at the end of the day. I can write all genres of music. And so it would be wrong for me to not use what God has given me. And so, and also, even though my family are, you know, we come from the church, I always make sure that I'm respectful.
Yes.
And my grandfather told me to never do things that compromise my morals and my values. And so the things that they instilled in me, you know, from the church, I still carry those values. And if I'm ever in a situation, especially, you know, in the music industry, it can be.
I know it.
You know what I'm saying?
I know it.
You know? And so I just kind of, if it's something that I don't want to do, I don't do it.
That's
right. If it's something that is compromising my morals, I don't do it.
That's
right. If it's money on the table and I know that I'm not comfortable, I don't do it.
Yes.
There's always going to be a bigger bag. And I make sure I keep God first.
That's right.
You know,
so if a record label was to call you today to give you a deal, or if they had to decide on giving you a deal, what separates you from every other R&B artist?
So I think what separates me from every R&B artist would be my authenticity.
Yes.
Like, I believe in staying authentic, and I have been working really, really hard to build my brand and knowing who I am. Like, a lot of times I feel like when artists sign, the label kind of tell them who they are, because they kind of figuring out
mm-hmm.
who they are when they get signed. And so it's easy for them to be like, okay, we want you to be this.
Right.
And it's like
a Build-A-Bear.
Yeah. And so granted, I know it's some tweaks and stuff that can be made, but I have a good overall view of who I am and who I want to be and how I want to present myself to the world. So yeah, just being authentic and being real. I never want to change that part about myself.
Absolutely. So tomorrow is Truth Family Fest. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this is an event that is community-based for mm-hmm. families, for the youth. What does it mean to perform at an event like this?
Oh, it really means the world. Like, it really, really means the world. And because I have a son, I always try to make sure that I am presenting myself in a respectable manner and just like putting my best foot forward. And so I was really honored when I got that invite too, because that mean I'm doing something right too. That mean I'm not like, when you all, you know, booked me and seen me, y'all were like, okay, this is somebody that is able to represent and be in front of kids and be able to perform, because sometimes you have artists who are great artists who can, you know, and so that means that I'm doing something right because my music is able to live in spaces where, you know, the kids be. So
absolutely.
Yeah. It's absolutely for everybody.
So what is next? What do you have next?
So currently I am working on something for Christmas. I think that's just a cool market to get into, just Christmas music. And so I'll be working on something for Christmas, excuse me. And then just behind the scenes, just working on another project.
Yes.
I don't know when that's going to come out.
Yes, it's okay.
But, you know, I just like to take my time, but Christmas for sure. And then, yeah, I'm just thinking about maybe doing, like, songwriting classes if people are interested. And I don't know, just something for Christmas. That's what I know.
Well, before, I want to thank you for joining us. Before you head out, I just want to tell you that I see you, right? Your music is beautiful. I see you. And as a young artist, I used to be an artist and I was your age. And I was a mom too when I was in my 20s. So I know the balance, the difficulty with the balance, but also having a support system. But it was on my heart to give this advice to you to never stop, right? Don't limit yourself. There's no limit. But also make sure that you pay attention to who you have around you, because a lot of people will see the light in you, right? And assume that you don't see the light. And then they come around and, you know, they could
try to dim.
Exactly, right? Don't ever stop being you. And if you do get into the industry, have a deal that's still going to allow you to be yourself.
Yes.
To where you don't have to conform.
Yes. Thank you for that. Oh my goodness.
It's important. We need it. We need it for the youth. Our babies need to see someone like you and be able to say, I want to, you know, grow up to be like her. Yes. Not saying you got to be a role model, but just a real model. You know?
Yes, a real model. Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
Just a real model. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Do you have any shout outs?
Sure. Yes. I have like three, period. Shout out to my mama, period. Hey, mama. Shout out to my friend, Sway. Shout out to my music administrator, Aishel. And
Aishel.
Period. Aishel White, the greatest administrator on this side of heaven.
Yes,
and,
absolutely.
Yeah, shout out to everybody who be supporting me. And yeah, shout out to God, period. Because I'm nothing without God.
That's right.
Yeah.
How can people find you?
So y'all can find me on Instagram at Kiamora Music. That is KIAMORA music underscore. Facebook, Kiara Stevenson, and then Kiamora on the side. Then TikTok, Kiamora Music. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We look forward to seeing you perform tomorrow. Again, if you guys are free, please stop down at Riverside University tomorrow from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for Truth Family Fest. We'll have Kiamora there. Ray Nitti will be there as well as Emmett James. Performances, vendors, resources, all of the above. We got to go to break. Do not touch that dial. It's your girl, Jazz Tyler, 101.7 The Truth.